Hello, I'm Andrew Cadell. This is number 0345, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0345. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actress Suzanne Wong, one of the stars of the comedy film A Weekend with the Family.
It is so funny. It is one of the funniest scripts I've ever read. When I was reading the script at home with my boyfriend when deciding whether I wanted to do the project, we were laughing out loud and getting choked up. I actually think that it really has the potential to do some healing for race relations between Koreans and blacks. I know that sounds preposterous, but I think that after you see it, you'll understand.
Bob DiRigo Jones, host of Let's Be Fair, talks about a really bizarre lawsuit involving a woman texting and a ladder.
I just wrote an op-ed on this that'll be on my blog shortly, but one of the things I actually left out was the fact that she had walked by this ladder twice before she ran into it. So she knew that it was there. She was distracted by her cell phone. And one of the elements we often see of lawsuits like this is she could have but didn't sue some of the other entities involved in this.
And Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter. Plus, we do indeed have lots and lots of Stuff File news and an idiot of the day coming your way. The guests later. The person who told you this was show number 0345 was Andrew Cadell, a Foreign Services officer with the Department of Global Affairs and the co-author of The Goal, Stories About Our National Passion. And even though he is a civil servant working for the government, a really nice guy. Really, a really nice guy. You know, there are some of them in the civil service. I kid you not. People don't believe them. They're like unicorns and leprechauns, but they are out there. Thank you very much, Andrew, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Authorities said a man had been dining while holding a small snake at Aihora Sushi of Tokyo in Studio City, California. Witnesses said he became angry and got into an argument after showing the small snake, to several customers. He later returned to the restaurant with a 13-foot python, allegedly yelling obscenities and tossing the python on the floor. Said waitress Sissy Dashtort, "We asked him like three or four times and he said no. He was like starting fights with customers, so we had to call the police and fire department." Police arrested the man and charged him with criminal threats. Okay, I want to go back to waitress Sissy for a moment. She said they asked him three or four times to leave and he said no. And it was only after he started fights with customers that they called the police and the fire department. Here's my problem with her quote. When a guy walks into a restaurant with a 13-foot python, shouldn't your first move be to call the cops rather than to ask him four times to leave and then watch him start fights? I mean, do not pass go, do not collect $200, guy, snake, cops. It's a direct line for me, no deviations. Perhaps some people are just too nice. Yeah. Meanwhile, Russell Late was flying from England to Halifax, Nova Scotia, when his flight was diverted to Newfoundland. There, officials inspected a powdery substance in his bag, which tested positive for drugs. Late was taken into custody and was held for 5 nights while the powder was sent here to Montreal for further testing. That testing determined that the first test was a false positive that the Canada Border Services Agency says happens about 1% of the time. In a statement, the Combined Forces Special Enforcement Unit of Newfoundland and Labrador said late at no point during the arrest provided any explanation to authorities that the substance was human remains, the cremated ashes of a friend. The charges were withdrawn and the traveler was released once the results were received. When you're arrested for drugs and you know it's not drugs, shouldn't you at some point tell authorities it's just your best buddy? Yeah. Well, at the very least, that will be the last time his friend gets him into trouble, I'm assuming. Okay, here's a story that I just don't get. Tests showed that a Blue Earth County, Minnesota baby had been exposed to opiates and amphetamines before being born, and county attorney Pat McDermott said his team is thinking of charging the mother with a crime. Okay, that part I get. Here comes the dilemma. They've already charged the father. They say 41-year-old Daniel Sturdivant tried to limit the woman's access to money so as to limit her access to drugs, but couldn't be there all the time because he traveled for work. They say he even warned them that she used meth. Nevertheless, they charged him with child endangerment and exposing a child to drugs. Her body? His responsibility? Really? Is the county attorney paid by the head count? I mean, really, have you thought of charging the child, too? Come on. That's just moronic. And finally, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it was just last week on this very program that we shared with you the story of a guy who tried on several occasions to hire a hitman, both times striking out when the hitmen turned out to be cops. Well, this week we take a similar story of a doofus one step further. In 2008, Gregory Aaron Rouser of Harrisonville, Pennsylvania, was convicted of ambushing and shooting Randy Walters as part of a family feud and was sentenced to 15 to 50 years in prison. Despite being shot three times, Walters survived. Now, in 2009, Rouser was convicted of conspiring with his girlfriend to hire a hitman from prison to finish Walters off. The hitman Rouser hired, of course, was an undercover cop who was placed in the prison when officials got wind of the plot. Rouser was sentenced to an additional 5 to 10 years. Not enough years, Walters commented at the time, and girlfriend Mildred J. Tesler, age 46, was given probation. Well, this year, Rouser, who is now 48, has been charged again with conspiring with his new girlfriend to hire a hitman from prison again to kill Walters. This time, the hitman was a hit woman, a female state trooper who told the conspirators her name was Joni Pepperoni. Rouser and Lorraine K. Patterson, age 54, were charged with solicitation and conspiracy to commit homicide. What I want to know is, how does an imprisoned loser like Rouser keep getting new girlfriends? And also, how dumb do you have to be to put your faith in a hit woman named Joni Pepperoni? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Suzanne Wong is one of the stars of a comedy film that will be released on April 1st. It's called A Weekend with the Family, the story of a young attorney who looks to gain a position at a prestigious law firm while secretly dating his boss's daughter, whom he's hoping to marry. But when his girlfriend decides to arrange a surprise family weekend get-together, hilarity ensues. Suzanne, who is one of my favorite people, is on with us right now via Skype from Los Angeles to talk about the film and other things. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Peter. It's been a long time, hasn't it?
It's been quite a while. Hope all is well.
Well, since the last time we talked, I probably had my whole wildly adventurous journey with stage 4 breast cancer.
That was some of and other things that I wanted to talk about. I know there's a
yes,
PSA.
And I have miraculously reversed that extremely dire diagnosis, and I am completely cancer-free, which is a whole long story that I'm currently in the process of writing a book about, which is wonderful. But not only have I reclaimed my health, but now there's exciting career things happening. So I'm really happy to be speaking to you. The fact that I wake up every morning alive and vertical and pain-free is a beautiful thing.
And I do want to talk about that in a bit. I want to talk about Profiles of Hope. And there's a film that's out there on YouTube, which people really have to see. And we'll get to that in a moment. But let's talk about this new movie, A Weekend with the Family. It just sounds like a hoot.
It is so funny. It is one of the funniest scripts I've ever read. When I was reading the script at home with my boyfriend when deciding whether I wanted to do the project, we were laughing out loud and getting choked up. The film is hilarious. It has heart, and it also has hanboks, which is the name for the traditional full-length Korean gown that I wear frequently throughout the film. So it is. I play the mother of Karuchi Tran's character, who is dating Marcus Houston's character, and there's the culture clash between traditional Korean and sort of backwoods deep South black family. And I actually think that it really has the potential to do some healing for race relations between Koreans and blacks. I know that sounds preposterous, but I think that after you see it, you'll understand.
Well, one of the things I found interesting about the concept is it's a mainstream film that deals with a culture clash, but one of the culture clash isn't between white and another culture. It's between two other cultures, which is part of the melting pot of what North America is anyway.
Yes, and I love it. And I really am trying to think of another mainstream film that deals with a culture clash in a comedic way, but also with heart between Koreans and blacks. Can you think of anything?
I can't. Not a pen.
Right. So that feels very pioneering to me, and I'm extremely happy about the film. It stars Marcus Houston and Karuchi Tran. It is directed and written by Chris Stokes from You Got Served. It stars incredibly talented actors like Wendy Raquel Robinson and Clifton Powell and Dorian Wilson and myself. Wendy and Clifton are the parents of Marcus Houston's character, and Dorian Wilson and I are the parents of Karuchi Tran's character. And it is truly, I think that people will laugh out loud and get choked up. There is a pivotal emotional scene at the dinner table. I won't tell you what happens, but it really is a turning point. And, you know, it's sort of a West Side Story, Romeo and Juliet, the Hatfields and the McCoys. It's about two families that at the very beginning are clashing really strongly and then realizing that, you know, when people are in love, these petty things really seem so tragic for people to be fighting about, that just often come from fear and misunderstanding and not from anything that's actually insurmountable.
I know you've been battling your situation with your health over the last little while, which probably answers the next question I'm going to ask. And that is, you know, as you know, I'm an unabashed fan of yours, but you hadn't been seen on television or film for a while.
Yes.
Is that part of the reason, because of your health
yes.
situation?
Yes. Yes. So in 2006, I got diagnosed with breast cancer for the first time, and then I thought I had it handled, and it came back twice. So I had breast cancer three times in the past 10 years because, like most Asians, I'm an overachiever, you know, Peter. I can't just do that once. Woohoo! And it went to stage four because, again, overachiever. I can't just do stage one, two, or three. I have to do stage four. And then I'm such an overachiever that I have to reverse. I have to be given 6 months to live 5 years ago and roll up my sleeves and say no thank you to that diagnosis. I plan to attend my oncologist's funeral that told me that I would be dead by now. Yay! So I in a combination of Western medicine, Eastern medicine, alternative treatments, holistic treatments, revolutionary treatments, illegal treatments, and lifestyle changes and spiritual lessons, I managed to reverse that deadly diagnosis. And I think it should be illegal for a doctor to tell somebody exactly how much longer they have to live, because you don't know my mind and my soul and my heart and my body and my spirit and that intricate combination of and my will to live. So I'm sticking around for a long time.
Obviously a very strong-willed person. And I did mention that video, and people can find that on the video on YouTube. It's with Profiles of Hope, the interview there.
Profiles of Hope. Yeah, if you go on YouTube and type in Profiles of Hope, Suzanne Hwang, you will see a 30-second PSA and a 10-minute extended interview all about my journey. It is sponsored by the LA County Department of Mental Health. There's a Profiles of Hope phone app. There's a Profiles of Hope website, and they're showing the PSA on KTLA and in movie theaters during previews. It is basically a series that's an Emmy award-winning campaign where they take people who are in the public eye in some way, and they interview them about how they have dealt with mental health issues in their lives and overcome them and come through on the other side, to give people hope and to let people know that there is help. And I think that mental illness is one of the things that we still stigmatize and people aren't talking about, even in 2016. And we have to take the stigma off and start talking. And when you reach out for help, I mean, one of the reasons why I'm still alive is because I came out of the cancer closet and I decided to crack my heart open, stay still, slow down, and receive help and love. Every woman I know who has or had breast cancer has in some way spent a lot of her life saving and fixing and rescuing and loving and helping other people, but not taking care of herself, putting herself on the bottom of the list. And this experience has really turned that upside down for me. It has taught me how to ask for and receive help. We are only as sick as our secrets. We were not meant to go through terrible things alone. And I'm really glad that I was literally loved back to life by my friends, family, and fans from all over the world.
Well, that was one of the things that caught my attention when I saw the 10-minute video from Profiles of Hope on you. The first thing I wanted to ask when I saw that was, what is it about yourself going through this whole ordeal that you learned the most about yourself?
I learned that it is really difficult to work against your cultural programming. In Korean culture, it is considered low class to air your dirty laundry in public and ever admit that you have any sort of problem. And I realized how toxic that was, and this is what I realized. I'm so stubborn that it took stage 4 cancer for me to finally come out of the cancer closet, throw my pride and ego out the window, and stop feeling embarrassed or ashamed or weird or like a failure for having cancer, and just open up my story to deal with it with honesty and courage and my sense of humor. And I think those three factors are what, and my willingness to just be vulnerable, that is what led to me getting better. And I think that it's incredibly important for people to reach out, tell their story, tell their truth. You know, Maya Angelou said, there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside of you. And so I think that it really helped me to come out of the cancer closet, speak about it, be honest, be brave, but never lose my sense of humor about it, which, you know, I really am able to find the humor in anything. In fact, when I was first told that I had breast cancer over the phone in 2006, I said to the doctor, wow, this is going to be great material for my stand-up comedy act someday. And she said, what? And I said, tragedy plus time equals comedy. This is going to kill. And then I said, are you sure? My boobs are so small. You might want to check again. How's that possible? And she just couldn't believe that I was making light of it. And people say, how can you do that? And I say, how can I not? If I don't, if I take it all very seriously and get very dark about it, then I will die. So I choose life.
And this brings us back to the film, which is A Weekend with the Family. You talk about the fact that it's a story that brings together a black family and a Korean family. Something you just said a few moments ago, you know, dealing with your prognosis, is that the Korean community keeps things closely knit, keeps secrets. And speaking as a black person, I'm thinking that's really not that different from the black community. And I'm wondering if one of the things your film teaches is the fact that as different as we are all the same.
Yes, we are all the same. And not only that, if we just, instead of letting fear of something different prevent us from interacting, if we approach life more with curiosity and fascination and wanting to learn more, not I'm afraid of that, I don't understand it, and I shut you out and run away, then I think that, you know, the whole romantic love conquering all theme, I wish it didn't have to take romantic love between two people to force families to come together and actually listen to each other. You know, I remember Marilyn Manson talking in Bowling for Columbine when he was interviewed and asked, what would you tell these teenagers? that are inciting all this violence. Marilyn Manson said, I wouldn't tell them anything. I would start listening. Start listening to them. Do you know what I mean? And I thought that was so profound.
Absolutely. Again, the film is called A Weekend with the Family. It comes out on April the 1st. Suzanne, I thank you so much for being on the program with us once again. It's a pleasure and an honor to talk to you.
Thank you, Peter, and I hope it's not this long before we talk again.
Actress Suzanne Wong. Again, her film coming out on April the 1st is A Weekend with the Family. Also, her very touching interview from Profiles of Hope is a must-see. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0345, and you'll find links to her Profiles of Hope interview, the trailer for her new film, and her website.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about a very wacky ladder lawsuit. Plus, Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But right now, lots more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, authorities in Minnesota said an 11-year-old boy took a cement mixer truck on a joyride and led police in a chase of speeds of up to 71 miles per hour. The Dodge County Sheriff's Office, the Minnesota State Patrol, Casson Police, and Dodge Center Police said the incident began at around 3 p.m. when the boy stole the cement truck in Casson and started driving it around town. Police attempted to stop the truck for speeding, but the boy sped off and led authorities on an hour-long chase, reaching speeds of up to 71 miles per hour. The boy collided with a Minnesota State Patrol car and a Casson police car during the pursuit, which also saw one of the truck's tires popped with a spike strip. The young driver continued to flee on the rim of the deflated tire, causing damage to the roads and lawns. The truck was stopped in Dodge Center, and the boy was taken into custody when he attempted to flee on foot. Authorities said no injuries were reported, and investigators are still working to determine the extent of the damage caused by the boy. The delinquent was taken to the juvenile detention center in Rochester to be formally charged. Now, to all the parents out there of 11-year-old boys, how would your day end if cops showed up at your door to tell you the fruit of your loins had taken a high-speed joyride in a cement truck? I know in my case, if it were my parents, I'd be safer in that detention center. In any case, I guess this 11-year-old has clearly outgrown his Tonka trucks. Well, it was time for a test in math teacher Paul Swanson's class at Mira Mesa High School in San Diego, California. While the students worked on their problems, Swanson worked on his. He shopped online for lingerie. That's what the students say. Now, how did the testing students know he was shopping for lingerie? Well, Swanson forgot to turn off the hooked-up projector. Yes, his laptop was hooked up to a projector and showing everything on his screen in living color at the front of the class behind him. Several students pulled out smartphones and took video of the goings-on, but no one told Swanson. It happened on a Friday, and one of the videos went viral on social media over the weekend. The teacher found out when the principal called him into the office, said Bob Turner of the Mira Mesa PTO. He had no idea. Swanson told Principal Jeff Sabins he was shopping for his wife. He was put on paid leave while the district investigates. Which, you know, giving him, I would assume, the time and enough money to do his shopping from home. Okay, we start this next story with a quote from Panama City, Florida Police Sergeant John Moore. During the course of the investigation, we learned he came here from New Orleans on a bus with the sole intent to rob a bank in the Panama City area. The he in question was 38-year-old James Alexander. Apparently, he chose the area because he had been there before on spring break, and Alexander was prepared. Before he took a taxi to the bank, and had the cabbie wait, by the way, he did his research. He looked up on Google how to rob a bank, Moore says. Alexander was caught at the bus station where the cabbie dropped him back off. Okay, here's a tip, Jimmy boy. When you Google how to rob a bank, you should put in the full sentence, how to rob a bank without getting caught. I mean, didn't you learn in school that you can't get away with doing half of your homework? I'm just saying. And Mexico's latest female accessorizing craze is shellacking tiny dead scorpions onto fingernails using the second most venomous species of the arachnid, which is selling briskly at the Miss Unis parlor in Durango. In fact, while in town, according to a London Daily Mail dispatch from Durango, shoppers may check out the Races restaurant, which pioneered tacos filled with still wriggling scorpions that had been soaked in surgical alcohol to neutralize the venom. Wow. One way or another, we are the creature finding ways to plot our own demise. That's just ridiculous. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Syrian refugees arriving at the airport in Vancouver, British Columbia, have been warmly greeted personally in a video by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, but in March, some were inadvertently booked into the same hotel that was hosting the fifth annual Vancouver, that's Vancouver, F-U-R, convention. That's a convention of furries, anthropomorphic, full-sized, full-suited tigers, dogs, bears, foxes, etc. And they roamed the hotel, leading London's The Independent to report that the child refugees loved every minute playing with the furries and posing for pictures. Okay, I'm just waiting down the road for the refugees to Google furries, trying to find out more about it. I mean, most of the articles you find about furries would be sexual in nature. That's a little too much explaining to do to the kids, don't you think? Hey, welcome to Canada. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Each week, you get to hear Bob Dorigo Jones with his Let's Be Fair segments. On last week's program, he brought to our attention the story of a woman who was awarded over $160,000 after she walked into a ladder while she was texting. Now, I just had to have Bob on to talk about this in greater detail. So right now, he joins us from Michigan via Skype. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Peter. Yes, nice to talk with you instead of at you like I do every week.
Nice to have you on the program with us once again. As I sent to you in an email after last week's segment, when I saw this story, when I heard your segment last week, all I kept thinking was, this surpasses the McDonald's hot coffee as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. And by the way, it always thrills me when I know that I found a story before you did too. And in order to do that, and usually the times when I'm able to find something that you haven't, which is very rare for your listeners, just to let them know, you have a tremendous research ability. We found it in a legal publication in Georgia. This is one of the few sources you probably don't scour on a regular basis. And these publications exist in most states and in some large metropolitan areas. They're legal publications where basically lawyers get together and brag about the cases they won. And this was a case where it was so outrageous to file a lawsuit like this that the tone of the article was that this lawyer who filed the lawsuit couldn't believe he won.
And let's, for those who didn't hear it last week, let's bring them up to date with the situation. This is a woman who walked into a bright orange ladder that was coming from a truck and leading towards, I guess, a building, crossing the sidewalk. And she never looked up from her phone and walked into this ladder, basically headbutting it.
Exactly. And I just wrote an op-ed on this that'll be on my blog shortly, bobderigojones.com. But one of the things I actually left out was the fact that she had walked by this ladder twice before she ran into it. So she knew that it was there. She was distracted by her cell phone. And one of the things that I talk about here, and one of the elements we often see of lawsuits like this, is she could have but didn't sue some of the other entities involved in this. Often you'll see somebody will sue not only in this case who put the ladder there, but the telephone company, the telephone manufacturer, and you name it. There's a number of others that could have been sued. So maybe the lawyer missed the boat on that one, but he wound up getting more than seven times what the amount of money that the woman spent on her injury. So I think they came out pretty well. Of course, anybody who listens to me talk every week would know that it's not a good thing, because all of us pay for this. The costs get passed on to all of us in the form of higher prices for products and services.
As I said in the email I sent to you last week, I was so incensed by this story. I was figuring, gee, it's another classic case of somebody who's just abdicating any of their own personal responsibility. And I can't imagine why she didn't go after her cell phone provider and her cell phone company, because obviously they were part of the distraction.
Well, you were absolutely right. And there's a lot of questions in this case. One is, now the jury, of course, is complicit in allowing her to escape responsibility. It's one thing to file a lawsuit. It's another thing for a jury of a number of people to agree. And the jury in this case decided somehow that her amount of responsibility in an injury that she caused was only 8%. And the lawyer said he couldn't even figure out where the 8% figure came from. You know, it could have been 16%, could have been 30, 50, 100% is what I probably would have voted for. So all these variables go into making this, like you said, I think, I agree that it's probably the new poster child for frivolous lawsuits in America.
Now, digging deeper into this story, is there any onus on the lawyers for the opposition as opposed to the defense lawyers? And the reason why I say, or actually the defense lawyer is what I'm getting at this case, because I don't know what it's like in a civil situation, because this is a civil case, right?
Yes, it is.
So I don't know what it's like when it comes to certain things like jury nullification. Do lawyers have the opportunity to nullify or refuse a certain jury member when they are initially picking the jury?
Yes, they do have an opportunity to challenge jurors, and I know what you're getting at, and this is interesting. I think your listeners will be very surprised to hear that the foreman of the jury actually had a company very similar to the one who was sued for placing the ladder where it was placed in this woman's pathway. And the defense really, you know, it can go either way. So it isn't a real easy decision. Sometimes you can think, well, the foreman would empathize with the person that was sued and try to throw the case out very fast. In this case, it turned out opposite. He said, well, if it would have been me, you know, he's probably, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but he could be saying, I'm more responsible than this person. And he was part of the jury that came up with this 8%.
It's also a way of doing damage to literally one of your competitors.
Exactly. It could be. Now, we don't know how large of an area this was. They could have been doing business with each other, and that does happen in litigation.
Is this, especially considering the amount of press this story is getting, it is getting attention, is this something that is appealable?
It is appealable, and it will undoubtedly be appealed. And I would expect this decision, the amount of money to be reduced on appeal. The problem with this is, again, somebody who's done nothing wrong has to spend thousands of dollars, and they'll never recoup the money that they're spending on lawyers.
Yeah. Is there also an opportunity, or was there, because it's now past tense, was there an opportunity after the verdict was read for the judge to set it aside?
Judges can do that. It's very rare, and judges like to let the process work out in large part in most places in the United States, at least. I'm not sure how it is in your neck of the woods, but judges are elected. And they like to tell people that are voting for them that they're letting the process work through the jury. So there are a lot of reasons why judges don't often set aside a verdict like that. But part of the flaw could have been in the instructions that the judge gave to the jury about maybe they just were in the dark about how they would arrive at a figure. So there are a lot of ways and a lot of places along the course of a lawsuit where something going wrong can lead to a bad result like this.
And for the record, for our audience, to answer your question, in Canada, judges are appointed.
Yes, well, a lot of people advocate that here, and there's pros and cons. I think it's good that the public has some kind of input in who their judges are.
Well, I hope it doesn't go all the way up to the Supreme Court in appeals, because, you know, it could end up as a deadlock there.
That's right. If it gets there quickly, it would.
Yeah. Bob, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I should always like to mention the book that you did, Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever. And people can also go to your website, as you mentioned a few moments ago, which again is?
BobDerigoJones.com.
And that's where people will find your op-ed piece that you're writing on this very story.
Yes, it is. They can see a picture of the ladder, too, if they'd like.
Keep us posted and let us know where this goes in the appeal process. I'm sure this is a story that's going to be around for quite some time.
I will do that, Peter, and I appreciate your interest in it.
Thank you very much, Bob, for being on the program.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0345, and you'll find links to Bob's website. And coming up right now, this week's edition of Let's Be Fair. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It probably wouldn't surprise you to hear that Harvard Law School has produced almost twice as many U.S. Supreme Court justices as any other law school. Its reputation for training brilliant lawyers is well known, so when I visited Harvard recently, I made it a point to tour its law library. Located just north of historic Harvard Yard, the library contains statues and tributes to some of its most distinguished alumni, and I was happy to see that one of them honors my favorite judge, Learned Hand. That's right. His name was Learned Hand, and what an appropriate name it was. He was a respected federal judge, and while he never served on the Supreme Court, his opinions have been quoted more often in Supreme Court opinions than those of any other lower court judge. Let's be fair, that's certainly praiseworthy, but he's my favorite judge because he once said, and I quote, "Litigation is to be dreaded beyond almost anything short of sickness or death," unquote. A smart man indeed. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is to talk about Canada's pastime, Stuart the Rocket Nauman. Hello, Stu.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Just tickety-boo.
Well, you know what? You won't hear me, hitting referees or hear me about me causing riots in the streets of Montreal.
Well, that's good. That's good.
You know, but I do have eyes of fire sometimes, so just better watch out.
Well, that's what the rumor is going on out there.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I didn't want to bring it up, but, you know, there you go.
Well, wait to hear, see my antenna rushes. But before you do that, on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at a hockey book, a more fond, nostalgic type of hockey book. Because let's face it, Peter, this hockey season has not been one for Montreal Canadiens fans to cheer about. I mean, after a hot start, team's fortunes and their playoff hopes towards winning that elusive 25th Stanley Cup came crashing down in flames right after their Winter Classic win earlier this year. It sort of makes you want to flash back to a time when hockey had an age of innocence, when players had a more common touch with the fans, and a game of shinny on an old-fashioned frozen rink was a rite of a long, cold Canadian winter, and a spring in Montreal wasn't complete without a Stanley Cup parade, especially when it followed the usual route as decreed by Mayor Jean Drapeau. But these glory days of hockey come back to life in the form of a book called The Goal. And the book is a collection of 10 essays written by veteran sports reporter and broadcaster Andrew Cadell and Dave Stubbs, who was a former sports columnist for the Gazette. Now he's with NHL.com. The common thread of these stories is that they harken back to those simple days when a game of hockey was an all-day affair at your local rink, and hockey icons were greatly admired for their skills on the ice and not for their astronomical salaries. And believe me, Peter, what a great hodgepodge of hockey stories this book offers for the devoted Canadian hockey fan to savor, and are told with Cadell's and Stubbs' outstanding knack for journalistic storytelling. They range from the thrill of winning a local minor hockey league championship and getting that much-treasured crest sewn onto the sleeve of your windbreaker jacket, to the beauty of owning your own homemade ice hockey rink, to the late, great Habs play-by-play broadcaster Danny Gallivan, whom Cadell was convinced that Gallivan was just as much an integral part of the Canadiens team that he merited his own hockey card. Like that. But one of my favorite stories, actually, deals with the team, the other Montreal hockey team that dominated the local hockey scene back in the 30s, the Montreal Maroons. It's called the Black Horse. And it's recounted by Phil Cadell, who was related to Andrew Cadell. He used to be an employee with the Dawes Brewery Company in Montreal and was one of the main sponsors of the Montreal Maroons. And it was about a peculiar wager made between the vice president of Dawes Brewery and the captain of the Maroons, Montreal Maroons, Hooley Smith, 1935. And the wager was that if the Maroons won the Stanley Cup for the 1934-35 season, the brewery would give Smith one of the black Percheron horses that were used to pull the Dawes Brewery wagons. So like the Clydesdales of Budweiser. You know, it's like the Montreal version of that.
Right.
And they were also the mascot of the brewery's most popular brand of beer called Black Horse Ale. Now, to make a long story short, the Maroons ended up winning the cup and Smith won the wager. The problem was that particular Percheron horse that Dawes was going to give Smith wasn't black in color. So Cadell was tasked to raid every beauty parlor on St. Catherine Street and buy out every bottle of black hair dye they had so that the brewery could live up to their end of the bargain.
Wow, a horse dye job, huh?
Yeah. And just admit, there were during that week in 1935, there were no, you know, brunettes, so, you know, just a lot of blondes and silver-haired women walking around the streets of Montreal.
Do you think the horse enjoyed the dye job, or did it just give him a long face?
Well, hopefully it didn't rain very soon after that dye job.
You know
what I mean? But overall, the goal is an entertaining celebration and a wonderful nostalgic look back at how hockey was and still is Canada's national pastime. It takes us back to a time when the game of hockey united Canadians as they cheered for their favorite teams, or be the, you know, Canadians, the Leafs, or even the Maroons, or lived out their hockey dreams during a more uncomplicated period in our history. And it's the perfect antidote for those dedicated Habs fans who are nearing the end of suffering through one of the worst seasons the team has experienced in 75 years.
And the book is?
It's called The Goal, and it's by Andrew Cadell, Dave Stubbs, and Phil Cadell, published by De Voilier Publishing. It's based out of Ottawa, and it's $20.
And what do you recommend in a similar vein, sir?
Well, I figure if you're a hockey fan, you've got to read Ken Dryden's memoir, The Game. I think it's the seminal book about hockey and hockey players that was written in a much intelligent, insightful manner, and won a Governor General's Award. So that's one I recommend. Also, speaking of hockey broadcasters, although Danny Gallivan never wrote his memoirs, his cohort Dick Irvin did. He's written several books about hockey, but I do recommend highly his first book that was published in 1988, his memoir called The Now Back to You, Dick, which was a memoir of not only his life in broadcasting, but also about his dad, Dick Irvin Sr., who was a coach for the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens during the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Wonderful book. Wonderful book.
You know, if you hadn't said, if you hadn't mentioned Dick Irvin, I was going to say, and any title written by Dick Irvin.
Oh, yes, I agree. He did some books about coaches and goalies and the Canadiens, too, and also about the 10 Stanley Cups that he covered for the Canadiens. But his first book is really a treat to read, let me tell you.
Didn't he also write about referees?
Yes, he wrote about called Tough Calls, actually.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
He did probably about referees.
Yeah. So again, this week's book is?
Called The Goal by Andrew Cadell, Dave Stubbs, and Philip Cadell. And it's published by De Voilier Publishing, and it's $20.
And by the way, Andrew is a pretty decent guy, even though he is also a civil servant in Ottawa. See, they're not all what you think they are. He's a really good guy, Andrew is.
Yeah. Well, and he writes good stories, let me tell.
He does. And how can people find you, sir?
Well, if you're not going to see me tearing up the ice at the Old Forum, you can read me in the Montreal Times every week in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
I tell you, if you were tearing up the ice at the Old Forum, I think some of the shoppers might be upset.
Yeah, it would have been a cannonading shot, let me tell you.
Stuart Nullman, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just into the home stretch here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Want to know what the world is coming to? Items like this. The Glasgow, Scotland company Ausdin Shield announced recently that it has designed for potential sale for those relaxing yet secure evenings a fashionable yet bulletproof sofa and upholstered chairs sturdy enough to protect against 9mm handguns, shotguns, and AK-47s, with special marketing to hotels, embassies, and government buildings. Now, just how much safer do you feel, huh? Yeah. Oh, and under the headline of things people believe these days, murders are now being committed over hair weaves. According to reports, at least one took place this month in Memphis, with one likely explanation being a belief that a person who acquires tufts of human hair surely acquires the fortunes, good or bad, of the person who grew the hair. That is especially true of virgin hair from India, shorn for religious sacrifices, before falling into the hands of agents who sell to Western women, said a Memphis pastor. A generation back or so, people were being killed over tennis shoes. Oh, how we continue to progress as a species, huh? Yeah. And we have a couple of stories that come under the heading of people with issues. Story number one, Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. disclosed in March that in 2015 it received 8,670 noise complaints, but that 6,500 of those came from the same person, thus averaging 18 per day every day. I think it's fair to say at this point that perhaps that guy should move. And story number two, 45-year-old Buddhist monk Julian Glue was arrested in September in Humberside, England, and later sentenced to 11 weeks in prison after he slashed, by his count, 162 tires in his neighborhood because, he said, he was angry that he had stepped on an insect and needed to be jailed. So, I guess Julian Glue has become somewhat unglued. Yeah. And in Germany, a German mayor accidentally busted himself for viewing porn by posting a screenshot of his desktop on Facebook and said he was merely researching BDSM. Quickborn Mayor Thomas Koppel took to his town's official Facebook page to post a screenshot of the German Constitution as part of a debate about the far-right Alternative for Germany political party. Facebook users soon pointed out that the mayor hadn't cropped the screenshot, so it was plainly visible that he had other tabs open for pages titled Punishment Porn Videos, BDSM Porn Videos, and German Slut Punished. Koppel came clean in the comments section. "Yes, I visited the sites concerned," Koppel wrote. The mayor said his curiosity was piqued by a group of young men discussing BDSM on a ski lift in South Tyrol. Yes, isn't that how it always starts? Yes. Yes. Anyway, we're just out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuffall program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I do want to say that if you are a listener to the program, of course, you are hearing this, so you are listening to the program. But seriously, if you're a listener to the program and you have any questions or comments or concerns, you can always drop me a line. Send me a line to peter@thestufffile.com. That's peter@thestufffile.com. And we might even answer your question in the mailbag section on this very program. So, again, the email address is peter@thestufffile.com. Drop me a line. Love to hear from you. Okay, time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuffall presents the idiot of the day.
30-year-old Timothy Broad was convicted in February of a November Clacton, England convenience store robbery and jailed for more than 3 years. The balaclava-wearing Broad had pedaled away from the store with the money but managed to fall off his bicycle not once, not twice, but three separate times in short order, in the process losing both the balaclava, from which his DNA was recovered, and all of the cash. Yeah. Perhaps he should have had training wheels. I mean, why? Oh, why? If you're committing a robbery, can you not commit to being able to ride your escape bicycle? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0345. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0345. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air on online or as a download, we're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.